Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us in this hour number two as we roll along this morning. We have got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up in just a few minutes. But we want to start this hour with more on Eric Bieniemy, who earlier this week, again, it was Monday, we talked to Dave Preston at WTOP out in Washington on Eric Bieniemy becoming the Commanders' new offensive coordinator after 5 years with the Kansas City Chiefs under Andy Reid. And everybody by now sort of knows that Eric Bieniemy can't get a job as a head coach in the NFL. For whatever reason, he can't get a job as a head coach. And nobody has a real good reason why. Right now, don't get me wrong. I mean, you wouldn't want this in your industry, so it's not going to happen in the NFL. I mean, if your job, for example, was in the public eye, you wouldn't want you'd go up for a major job with, let's say, a corporation, and them coming out in a press release saying, "Here are the 5 reasons that Joe Smith failed to land this job." You are an organization. You hire who you hire, and you celebrate who you hire, and that's pretty much it. Everybody else that doesn't get the job, there is no explanation as to why. They don't have to explain what Eric Bieniemy did wrong or what he could do better. But the reality of it is that it's an eye-opening thing for a lot of people around this league as to what exactly is going on. Remember, this is somebody that while he has been under Andy Reid, right, the fact that he's not calling plays with the Kansas City Chiefs has not stopped other offensive coordinators who also did not call plays to be getting head coaching jobs in the NFL. In fact, there's a few of them who did not call plays with their former team to become head coaches of their new team. And that's the thing that is troubling. He had interviewed 16 times for 15 teams. The New York Jets interviewed him twice. And he has not been able to land one single job. 16 teams is 50% of the league. 50%. Now, some people have pointed out that Eric Bieniemy, and this has always been kind of the knock on him, if you were just evaluating this from afar without being somebody in the room, there's always kind of the assumption, well, if you've interviewed 16 times for 15 teams, then you must not be interviewing well, right? You might need some sort of guidance on how to interview well. Okay, but as people have been pointing out, how do you prepare to interview well when the team you are on continually goes to the Super Bowl or the AFC Championship, right? Bieniemy has been getting absolutely tremendous praise. I can't stress this enough from the people that are working with him. Patrick Mahomes, everyone on the offense, Travis Kelce, Andy Reid himself, Tyreek Hill, who now is on the Dolphins, loves Eric Bieniemy. There is the underground swell of support for Eric Bieniemy to become a head coach in the National Football League. And the reality of it is, and this is the other thing, if you are a GM and owner, president of operations, whoever you want in the room, right, and you're looking for a head coach, do you need somebody to come in and wow you with their personality? Or do you need somebody who knows exactly what they're doing? What is the most important characteristic? Now, the good ones know how to do both, right? The good ones know how to wow you in an interview and give you all the information that you want when it comes to preparing for what you have. That's the one thing when you go interview for a head coaching job, you know the deficiencies of that team and you know how to fix it. Right? It's kind of, as I said this one time before, it's not like other jobs. You may not know the inner workings of company B, but you know what you did at company A, and if they can use you at company B to fix their deficiencies, they'll see that in what you present. But this is a little different. Everything is kind of an open book. So if you're going to interview for the Colts job, let's say, you know that the Colts have this problem and this problem, and they don't have a quarterback, and this is a problem, and they got to get better in this area, and they were middle of the road here and middle of the road there, but they were good at this and they were terrible at this. And you sort of know all that. So you go in with a plan to fix it. And maybe those plans that he presents aren't as thorough as teams would like, but I got to think that the support underneath him from the top people who play the game has got to be enough for one team to take a chance and say it. Here's the thing. To every single NFL team that has a chance to hire Eric Bieniemy in the future, it won't be controversial. I'll tell you that right now. I don't know anybody who is saying Eric Bieniemy is an offensive coordinator again, and good, that's exactly where he belongs. I don't think I'm seeing any of that. Everybody is saying this guy should be a head coach in the National Football League. So if you are up for a new head coach next season and you hire him, one, you'll be sort of making a ton of people happy that have really followed this guy. The second thing is you don't have to explain it to your fan base. Here's the thing. Two guys just got hired from the Super Bowl. Two, and they were both coordinators on Nick Sirianni's staff, and both were on the losing side, including the defensive coordinator who made the wrong adjustments to Eric Bieniemy's adjustments, and Bieniemy won it out. You go back to the Super Bowl. A number of the Kansas City players said that Eric Bieniemy was the first one, not Andy Reid, he was the first one to notice that the Eagles were playing a stacked defense to prevent the jet sweep. And Bieniemy said, great, we'll do the opposite on a fake jet sweep and we'll score two touchdowns. And that's exactly what they did, both in the fourth quarter and both that allowed Kansas City to get back into that football game. And all of the credit went to Eric Bieniemy on those two schemes and his input into the play calling, telling Andy Reid, this is what's going on with what Philadelphia is doing and can't get a head coaching job. My biggest worry is, as we said earlier this week, my biggest concern is what if this guy goes to Washington and just because, as Dave Preston pointed out, you don't come away from Washington clean. You get dirty and your reputation can get a little soiled. That's what that organization has done to people. And I'm worried that here's a guy that had a spotlight on him. Would we know that Eric Bieniemy interviewed 16 times for 15 different teams if he wasn't the offensive coordinator for a team that went to 5 straight AFC championships and 3 Super Bowls? If he was the OC of the Arizona Cardinals for 5 years, and God bless him because the coaching changing there, but nevertheless, let's just say for sake of argument, a team that not in the playoffs very often, not in the Super Bowl, certainly not in the conference championship game, but he'd been at that location for 5 years. Would we know about it? We might. The NFL is pretty good at news all the time. So maybe we would hear that there was this, you know, offensive coordinator and name your mediocre NFL team that had interviewed a number of times over the years and couldn't get a head coaching job. But when the magnifying glass is on you so bright because you are in the spotlight all the time and you are the offensive coordinator, regardless of who's calling plays or not, you have the title of offensive coordinator with the greatest quarterback that's playing in the game today and one of the most explosive offenses that has been in the league over the last 5 years, and you can't get a head coaching job, it's a big story. So like I said, if you are a team in the NFL and you hire this guy, you aren't going to be doing something controversial. But here's the problem. If a number of years go by and Eric Bieniemy is not a head coach, he will no longer be the former head coach of the Kansas, a former offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs. He's going to be the former offensive coordinator of the Washington Commanders. And whatever the Washington Commanders do, if they don't get better and are not in the playoffs and are not in a position to go deep in the playoffs, that's the name that will be attached to him. Right now, Eric Bieniemy can ride on the, I don't know why I'm not getting a job. Look what I've done. Look at the team I'm on. But now he can't. Now he has to go do something. And if he doesn't do it, he has a really good chance of disappearing from the public sight. And that's not a good thing. He had an opportunity and he didn't get it. And whatever reason that is, and I hope to God it has something to do with him and not for the fact that they don't want him to be the head coach. Like the accusations that have been flying around this league for a long, long, long time. But the reality is, if you cannot get a head coaching job as an offensive coordinator, even if you're not calling plays from the Kansas City Chiefs, then there's something deeper that's going on. Right? As it's been pointed out, Eric Bieniemy is not the only coordinator to have gotten a job without the chief being the chief play caller of the team he was on. And think about the names that have been hired since the process of Eric Bieniemy becoming an interviewee for head coaching jobs. Urban Meyer, Nathaniel Hackett, Adam Gase, David Culley, Joe Judge, Matt Rhule.
Lovie Smith.
Not to mention new names that have popped up. Jim Steichen, John Gannon. Right? Frank Reich just got rehired.
Nick Sirianni.
Zach Taylor. Now he's doing good things, but Zach Taylor was, who's that? Matt LaFleur went from the Rams to the Titans, made a lateral move, and then got the head coaching job at Green Bay.
Who's the one in Minnesota?
Kevin O'Connell. So here's a bunch of guys that, again, you have to be kind of a real in-depth NFL person to know who these guys are on these staffs. And the biggest name, Eric Bieniemy, because his team is offense, is fantastic. He gets credit from the players that play for him, and he can't sniff an NFL head coaching job. I'm worried that he's going to disappear in Washington because Lord knows the number of people have. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb is coming up next on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb, your Wednesday edition. All right, so much to dissect, but what is the good of the day as we get rolling along?
Good of the day is great sports calls in history.
Okay.
We had another one last night.
Yes.
But when I say great sports calls, do you think of, maybe you think of Al Michaels?
Sure.
Do you believe in miracles, right? We all know that one. Or Vince Scully, She Is Gone.
Yep.
After Kirk Gibson's home run. We got to put Reese Davis up there now.
Reese Davis
was calling Virginia Tech and Miami last night.
Yes.
Did you happen to catch the game?
Won by the Hokies.
Won by Miami. The Hurricanes.
I'm sorry, the Hurricanes.
Hurricanes won, but you wouldn't know that. Because late in the fourth quarter, the Virginia Tech fans went crazy, nearly exploding the roof off the arena. Because there is a promotion that Virginia Tech is doing where if the opposing team, one of their players at the free throw line, misses two consecutive free throws, you get free bacon.
Free bacon?
Free bacon.
Where?
From
like
the,
a package of bacon?
Yeah, I guess you get a package of bacon.
Like a full package of bacon?
Yeah.
To thousands of people in the arena.
To thousands of people in the arena. The whole student body section. Here, you want to know what it sounded like?
Yeah, I do.
Here you go.
In the NCAA tournament for sure. Now, they have some vulnerabilities. Now, we got to get this here. After Jordan Miller missed that free throw, the crowd's going nuts. Here's why. If he misses the second one, everybody in this house gets free bacon. Bacon for everybody!
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Sizzled up in the frying pan.
So they just hand out.
As you're exiting the arena, I can just picture people there like, you know, a little.
Is it a
Oscar
coupon?
Meyer,
hopefully it's
little,
a coupon or something.
I hope so. If not, I would hate to think that they have just stacks of frozen bacon on hand.
Just handing out boxes.
Cold bacon.
It's awesome. Does anybody know who sponsored this or how? Who's on the hook for thousands
providing
of boxes
all the free
of bacon?
Bacon? I don't, that's a great question. You know,
Oscar Mayer or
Hormel,
is it local,
you know, is
yeah,
it just,
local
you know,
grocery chain.
Yeah, Piggly Wiggly or Wawa. I don't know what's in.
Can you
Virginia.
Imagine they were giving away a free dozen eggs if he had missed back to back free throws?
Oh, you would have.
They might have.
But see, that's the way
down.
To do a promotion, right? You do it towards the end.
Yeah.
You often talk about the promotion of the Pokemon cards.
Oh, that was my favorite.
They should have done it at the end.
I know. That was my favorite. When people came to our minor league basketball game on Pokemon night, got the free cards we were giving away, and turned around and left. It's my favorite. What a bunch. We learned our lesson on that one. Yeah. And by the way, I'm not going to mention who came up with the promotion, but believe me, the next down the road, we got, there was a lot of conversation about that in meetings because it cost a fortune.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yeah. But nevertheless, but that's awesome. Free bacon.
Free bacon.
I love those, man. It's okay. It's one thing to be like, hey, your local Wendy's is offering a free double-double if somebody gets a double-double. Like, it's okay. All right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I get a free burger. Maybe I get some
World
tacos.
Every World Series, there's the
steal a taco. Yeah. There's always like, okay, I get a burger. I get a burrito. I get a taco. But this is just bacon.
Free bacon, man.
Here you go.
Free bacon.
Put it on a BLT. Make it with eggs. Put it on a burger. Eat it regular. I don't care what you do with it. It's a box of bacon. Good luck. Here you go.
And all you needed was somebody on the opposing team to miss two free throws.
That's right. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's great.
And
good.
I just love. I love the crowd. Crowd went crazy.
They knew what was going on. You know what?
They ended up losing the game.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
And Miami's good this year. Miami's ranked in the top 25. Hey, who cares? You get bacon. Virginia Tech, you get bacon. All right, what's the bad of the day?
Bad of the day. We might explore this a little bit later, right? But I have to go with the Jets' pitch to Derek Carr.
Actually, I was going to talk about this later. Yeah.
So I figured that was going to happen, you know, because what the real bad is that fans are wondering if the Jets even believe the pitch that they gave to Derek Carr.
Yeah.
In a nutshell was, hey, you win a Super Bowl in New York, you're going to Canton.
Well, it's a little bit more detailed than that. They believe he can win a Super Bowl in New York.
Yeah.
So here's the problem with that. If you are saying that you believe that Derek Carr is a Hall of Fame player and a Super Bowl champion,
and that your
if he
team,
plays for your team,
your team is just one person away.
Then what are you waiting for?
Yeah.
Why are you waiting for Aaron Rodgers? You can sign Derek Carr right now. If you're making this public statement, why aren't you rushing to his agent and saying, we're not waiting for anybody. That's all baloney. We believe your guy can win here. We believe your guy can win a Super Bowl here. We believe that he will be a Hall of Famer when he does that. Then sign him now. What are you waiting for? That doesn't make any sense to me. So it's one thing to say, oh, we believe he could be a great player here. They all say that. That's all bluff. But if you're getting into the devil of the details, then what are you waiting for?
Yep.
Look, why are you blowing smoke when you don't believe that?
And that's why you have fans. Your own fans are sitting there going, are they serious?
Yeah. And like, you don't believe it because you're waiting to see how Aaron Rodgers is going to play out in Green Bay.
Yeah, which we have to wait till next week, apparently, because that's when Pat McAfee's off vacation.
That's right.
Because you know he's not going to talk to anybody else until then.
This is what we were saying yesterday. If you're a team that Derek Carr is going to, like New Orleans, who we visited earlier, if you're New Orleans, why don't you say to Derek Carr, it's like, you want to wait for the Jets? You want to be the second person with the Jets on something? Do you want the Jets to come back to you in a couple of weeks when the Aaron Rodgers thing fizzles out that he's staying in Green Bay?
I would say the
Or do you want to come here and play right now? Be our quarterback right now. We'll have a press conference tomorrow introducing you as the new quarterback of this team. We can't get in the Aaron Rodgers sweepstakes.
And I would say the Saints have a far better pitch than the Jets do right now. Just by simply saying, like, who's your competition in the South?
It's
just simple as that.
But again, how do you feel if you're Derek Carr if they're saying all these awesome glowing things about you, but they don't want you?
Yeah.
They don't want you tomorrow. Right? And that just doesn't make sense to me. Go get him, Jets, if you believe this. Put your money where your mouth is. Go get him today. He can sign today. He doesn't have to clear anything. There isn't a magical date that Derek Carr has to wait for in order for him to sign a deal. He's a free agent right now. It's ridiculous.
Nope.
That's what happens when you're careless with words. Because then when they get Aaron Rodgers, they're going to say, what about Derek Carr? What happened there? Oh, well, we had a chance to get Aaron Rodgers. Well, you didn't know at the time you made the statement about Derek Carr that you could get Aaron Rodgers. You had no idea what was going to play out. So you basically told the fan base that there's a quarterback that you like, that you think is that could win a championship for you, but you didn't go after him because you think somebody else was better, and then you ended up not getting that guy. And if you're the Jets, you have to get somebody. If I were the Jets, I don't know what I would do. I honestly don't know how I sell Derek Carr to my fan base if Aaron Rodgers is available, and Derek Carr has already shown when he's on the Raiders with Devontae Adams and all and Josh Jacobs and Darren Waller, he couldn't win with the Raiders. What makes him think he can win with the Jets? He's been in the conference. Man, the Jets screw this up, man. It's just a mess. All right, what's the dumb of the day? That might actually be the dumb of the day.
Very close to being the dumb of the day, because the dumb of the day is not really dumb.
Okay.
It's just, you know, one of those things that's hard to fathom or understand. And that is that a real-life Sharknado occurred in Australia.
Oh, boy, really?
Now, it wasn't sharks, it was fish, but in the remote town of La Jamanu, which literally is in the middle of nowhere. The next closest town is 350 miles away from it.
Is it? Obviously, it's on the shore, right?
No, it's in the outback. It's in the outback.
Oh, right, okay,
that's
okay.
Why I said it wasn't sharks. Well, I'm just calling it a Sharknado.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
But the residents there experienced a weather phenomenon known as raining fish.
Oh, because the winds pick them up out of the water?
I guess a tornado or something picked them up out of the water, and you're just walking down this little town, and it's literally raining fish on top of you.
That would be awful. God.
It's like only in Australia. I can't imagine this happening anywhere else.
Mother Nature's a beast, isn't
he? We have tornadoes all the time in the Midwest. I've never heard of, oh, my God, did you see all the fish rain down on top of you?
If I was in that town, and I would think it was a plague.
Right.
I would think like, oh, my God, that, you know, the heavens are angry.
What's the point anymore?
Exactly. What are we doing now? Is the river going to turn blood? We're going to have locusts? What's going to happen here?
Yeah.
Raining fish.
Do I look to the west or the east to see someone coming down the mountain?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah. Apparently, though, this isn't the first time it's happened in La Jamanu.
Do you think they get used to it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they happened in 2010 and 2004.
Yeah.
And then they have another date, 1974, where it was first recorded of fish raining down.
What if they were piranhas that just stayed alive for a brief second and attacked everybody?
I just can't imagine. You're just walking down and you just get pelted by a fish.
I know. That has to hurt, right?
It's got to.
It's like getting hit with a hail ball. It's a ball of ice. This would be awful. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. As we continue, it is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's.
Is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. By the way, did you see any of the clips? Probably not the show, but did you see any of the clips of South Park ripping Meghan Markle and Prince Harry?
I haven't watched it.
Floated around on social media.
No, I've seen the article pop up a bunch of times, but I haven't been able to click on it just because I'm kind of annoyed that they'd be offended. That's what South Park does.
I had to watch the episode. Now, for full enclosure, I was a South Park fan for a while. But after it first came out, a number of years.
Oh God, I used to have watch parties.
I kind of let it fade out a little bit. Yeah. I enjoy their work, but how many seasons have they been on? 25 years?
They've
been on TV. I mean, my God, they've been on TV forever.
Yeah, because I literally used to have watch parties in college.
Oh, yeah.
Get together on a Wednesday night, and we had so much fun watching it because, I mean, we've never heard a cartoon like this before.
So funny. It's always been edgy. I always thought
Matt and Trey quit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because don't they tease that every single season?
All the time, yeah.
That's our last season. We're not doing it anymore.
I was perusing my stuff yesterday, and I started seeing all these clips of the show ripping Harry and Meghan Markle. And I started watching the clips, and then I started watching not only clips, but then there would be like a news program in Australia, a news program in you know, Canada or England, wherever it was. All these people were commenting on the show and how Harry and Meghan Markle were so angry they were thinking about suing them.
Yeah.
Even though there's no reference to them directly. That's how you play the game, right? You make it so close, but you don't cross the line.
Yeah.
So I said, finally, so I found the episode on HBO Max last night and I watched it. And I'm telling you, man, for me, it was like going in a time machine. It was like remembering how I used to just sit back and watch this show. And I used to do a lot of editing stuff at night and I would just watch this, and it was just a joy. It was so well done. It was called the Worldwide Privacy Tour. And all it was those two were going on talk shows and just running around yelling at people that they wanted privacy and no one was paying attention to them, but they were yelling at them to leave them alone.
That's funny.
So funny. And then they bring him on a talk show and he goes, "So you don't want attention, but here's your best-selling book, Wah." It's so good. And then at the end, I thought was the best part is Harry, the Harry character is
not really Harry.
Cause by the way, he's the Prince of Canada. The Canadian queen died.
Okay.
So they set it up like that. And he starts saying how they don't need anything, right? He gives the speech while his wife is sitting next to him. They don't need the fame. They don't need the attention. They don't need the money. They have each other and everything work out. He goes, "Right, babe?" And she says nothing. Then he keeps going, "Right? Nothing." And he opens up. He goes, "Hello." She doesn't say a thing. And that's the brilliance of those guys, is that they're able to create a show making fun of what we all think, right? And that's what I've always loved about it. So it took me back. I mean, I'm way older than I was when I first watched the show, and my tastes have changed a bit, but it reminded me of the good old days when I was young and everything was edgy and funny and different and unique.
Well, you could, and I feel like they're the last show.
Yeah.
That doesn't care what you think.
Right, right.
Because everyone now is like, oh, you know, they got a skirt around this, skirt around that, and they just exploit it.
They just went, whatever, it's fine.
I saw one where it was, tackling trans,
yeah, right, that
transgender
one.
Yeah. Thing with Cartman, and I mean, it was funny,
real funny, yeah,
you know,
a lot
but
of their stuff is hilarious.
It's a lot of things that they do where you just, you know, it's the questions that we have that no one seems to know the answer to,
right? Exactly,
and that they're going ahead and throwing it out there saying, "Do you have an answer for this? Because we don't."
But here's the thing, that's what I have to was saying about this show, and Simpsons is kind of like that, is where, when you do a sitcom, right? You just take a regular straight live sitcom, right? With actors. You only get a window of time because they get older, you run out of storylines. Even if you're doing it with adults, you felt like you've done everything. But if you're a cartoon like Simpsons or Family Guy or South Park, and you just are constantly, all you need to do is just open up the newspaper and you'll find the next topic.
Yeah.
You'll never run out of things to comment on.
Like a sitcom, you're limited to your geographic region, right?
Right.
It wouldn't make any sense for a show based in New York to be completely about California stuff.
Right, exactly, exactly. You're trying to set it in a real-life circumstance, so you have to come up with, you know, it's like Three's Company, right? What's the big joke about Three's Company? Every episode was about a misunderstanding, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, Mr. Roper would come in and he would hear Chrissy and Jack in the bathroom trying to put up a shower curtain rod, but it sounded sexual. And next thing you know, that was the big misunderstanding, right? You can only do that so much before it wears itself out. But if you're working on as one of the writers for South Park, you just go, who's making controversial stuff now? And then you go, let's just base it on that.
Yeah, what's the big controversy of the day?
What's the controversy of the day? What are people complaining about? What's the society like today? And it changes all the time, so you get fresh content all the time. And your characters stay exactly the same all the way through it. They're still in school,
yep.
Right? They're like they haven't grown into, because you're a cartoon.
Longest fourth grade year ever.
Exactly, right?
I think they're still in fourth. Did they have an episode where they went to fifth grade?
I don't remember that, but they might have. I might have missed it, but yeah, they might have. But that's your content, right? It's always winter. They're always, you know, always in winter. South Park. And that's like, and so it was really good comedy. And I was glad they did it because, and yeah, it's ridiculous to see them complain. Like, it's better to just laugh at it and move on, right? Going to court, suing? What are you suing for?
No, I mean, that's, you know, that's the form of flattery, too.
Right.
I mean, isn't that the comedian's things? Like, you know, the biggest form of flattery is having a comedian make fun of you?
Right, exactly. Why don't you just add yourself to the list of celebrities that have been skewered by this program?
And all they're doing is feeding into the narrative that they were how they were portrayed.
Exactly.
It's like the perfect thing for Matt and Trey, the creators of South Park. Like,
they just,
yes, we're being sued by them. We just did this against them, and now look.
And here's the thing. Both of those guys, I saw in a Forbes article, both of those guys made $160 million last year, right? Not to mention all the millions that they made before. Good luck. You don't think every one of these episodes has been, and scripts have been looked at by a corporate level attorney, somebody within their business to go, hey, make sure this is good. Penn and Teller used to talk about the show they did on Showtime, that BS show that they did on Showtime. They would run everything by a lawyer to say, where's the line? And the lawyers would go right there. And they go, great, we'd just go right there and we won't go over. And they never got sued. They would say things about organizations. They would say things about schemes or this or that or this. And they would cut and they would edit interviews in a certain way and never got sued because the lawyer was always, you're right there. I guarantee those guys are like,
just
yeah,
real quick, you want to know what their net worth?
Got to be $500 million each.
Yeah, if it's there's not a concrete one, but it's between $600 and $700 million.
Yeah, exactly. That's about right. So guarantee you they have somebody on staff that knows exactly what libel and all that slander or whatever that stuff is legally that would get you into trouble. Yep. Now they know exactly what that is. They all do. That's the thing. Seth MacFarlane does that same stuff. The Simpsons know that same stuff. They are people. You think that business is going to go down because somebody got offended and got a lawyer? Like, you got to be kidding me. They know exactly what's coming. They know what they're doing. But it was really, really hilarious.
I was reading a little bit more about this. This amazes me, right? So Matt Stone is reportedly worth $700 million. Trey Parker is reportedly worth $600 million. Okay. That's because they split the profits.
Oh, okay.
So South Park itself is like $1.2 billion
it's great.
Worth. And they split it, but Matt Stone has a few more acting credits.
Yeah, right. He's still getting some residual stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just wild. I never would have thought. Who thought way back when South Park first premiered and you and I, you know, just kids basically watching this cartoon going, oh, my God, this is unlike any cartoon we've ever seen.
Ever.
20 plus years later, it's a billion-dollar organization.
Yeah, to find it, I had to go. I have HBO Max. It's on HBO Max. I had to go, okay, because you click on it, and then it gives you episode one, season one. And you're like, wait a minute, hold on. And then you go to the episodes section, and it's 25 of them. It was like The Simpsons when they got on Disney Plus. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember that episode. You got to all through the seasons. And then I finally went to the last one. The last one they posted was this one. And I was like, okay, good. I got to see it.
I
got
to check that out.
Good stuff. Yeah, if you can see it, watch it. Really, really funny. Really, really funny. And it's a bullseye right on the numbers, right? It's an absolute target shot right on the numbers. It's really, really well done. All right, coming up, an emotional night in sports at Michigan State and why sports has that level of importance. Tom Izzo even said it afterwards. The Spartans taking on Indiana, but it was a lot more going on in East Lansing.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, Ken Weinman is going to join us next hour. We're going to talk to him about the Ravens. Todd Monken got the press conference yesterday, and we talked about Lamar Jackson's situation is gigantic. It could be seismic, depending on the deal. If he gets the same deal a little more than Deshaun Watson, that's it. You're done. You're not going to be able to give non-fully guaranteed contracts to star quarterbacks in the NFL again. That's it. Once two do it, that's the new standard. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal how Lamar Jackson, who's negotiating it by himself, is going to negotiate it. We'll talk more about that coming up at hour number three. Brock Purdy also is going to be out a little bit longer due to inflammation, has delayed his surgery. You know that him and Trey Lance are scheduled to battle it out this summer for the starting job of the 49ers. Who knows how long that's going to be now. It's a big surgery. It could be more. It could be a fully reconstructed surgery. They don't know yet. So it's up in the air with Brock Purdy and his status, at least as a competitive quarterback in the battle for the starting job with Trey Lance. Last night in East Lansing, an emotional night for the Michigan State Spartans. As many of you know, early last week, there was a shooting on campus. Three people died. A couple are in critical condition. There were eight people that were shot all together. They canceled, or at least postponed, a game that was scheduled for Wednesday of that week against Minnesota. They have not rescheduled that game yet. But then they went on the road this weekend and they faced Michigan. Now, this is a rivalry in state, but the Wolverines did a great job of honoring just the university in their solitude with the university for the tragedy that happened with the shooting. They colored the arena green, and it was a very emotional moment. But a lot of people had this game last night sort of circled to say, what would the atmosphere be like for the student body and for fans to come into the arena and sort of come together as a community after this shooting? They had really not been able to do so since Monday of last week. So last night they played number 18 Indiana, and they won the game. They won the game against Indiana. And Tom Izzo at the end of the game said that the best way you could give a hug to the community is to go out there and play well, right? And they did, and they played well, and they won. And it was an emotional night. But it goes to show you something, and there is a power to this thing that we call sports that is so unique to anything else that we have, because it is an absolute unifier when at times we are divided when it comes to the actual arguments of sports, right? We can argue who's the better coach, who's a better team, does this person get enough, should this person get money, should they sign this guy? We can have arguments about all of that, but we come together and utilize sports in times of really tragic moments. You don't have to go back that far to 20 plus years ago where sports was absolutely needed when the country was struggling with how it was reacting to the 9/11 attacks, right? NFL had canceled that weekend, but if you were around at that time, if you're old enough to remember that time, when the NFL came back, all of the flags and all of the fans that were really cheering, but even that aside, baseball and what baseball did, Mike Piazza's home run, I mean, the World Series with, you know, George Bush coming out to throw the first pitch, being in New York facing the Diamondbacks, all of those things, sports becomes this sort of unifying thing because, and they think it's a couple of reasons why. One, as I mentioned earlier, it allows a community to come together. Granted, it doesn't allow everybody to come together, but it allows a good majority of people to come together. That arena was full last night, and it's filled with a lot of people in the student body. So it's the closest thing that you can get to getting everybody together in one thing that they can cheer for and they can be excited about and they can join in the entertainment of the sport. Yep, you can gather for candlelight vigils and you can gather for those things. But sports is utilized in a way where they can say to the community, yes, maybe only 70,000 can come to this football stadium, or maybe only 18,000 can come to this basketball arena. But it is a sign that we can come together as a community the best way we possibly can. And Izzo is right in a lot of ways. He absolutely utilized that game to say to his players, look, play your best. Play hard for the people that came here. And maybe just for a brief period of time, they can get some enjoyment back into their life. They can get some emotion, some positive emotion back in your life. And again, this isn't a speech about how great sports is, because there are times where sports is wonderful and there are times where sports is terrible, right? For everything that we get out of sports that's positive, we get some things that are negative. Right. We do get people fighting over teams, violent over teams, violent over arguments on teams, things like that. We see a dark side to over fandom that you can't that you don't get in a lot of other entertainment industries. Right. Nobody's burning down a city because the Marvel movie stunk. Right. But my God, if a crowd gets together after a tough loss or even a good win, man, you might be cleaning up the next day. right? That's what sports can do, because there's an emotional element that's tied into it.
One certain city before big games always greases their light post.
Right, exactly.
Just because they know what's going to happen.
They know what's coming. They know what's coming. But when there is absolutely no way to come together anymore politically, I think those I don't know what it would take to get both the Republican side, Democrat side to come together in agreement in unification. I don't know anymore. I don't even know if another 9/11 attack would do that. I'm not as into the political world as some of my friends are in this radio business who do news talk every day. But I just see it from the outside, and I honestly don't. I don't know. But you and I talked about it this fall with the United States World Cup team. I think that sports does this better because you can put aside everything else and root for one thing. You can live in a city that is divided politically, racially, whatever. You can live in a city where it's always a fight with something, always an argument about a policy, always arguing about whether or not funding should go here or there. But once that team reaches a level where, even if it's not a championship level like it was last night, where you need some sort of community healing, sports does its part. It's not bringing back people. It's not even making people forget. It's just bringing people together. You wear the T-shirt. You hug your neighbor. You realize why you're all there and why you're all unified in this one thing. And sports can do that really, really well. And it was on display last night. And to me personally, if there was one head coach that I think was needed in a moment like that, it's Tom Izzo. He always seems to know those moments. I have a lot of respect for Tom Izzo. I really have always enjoyed. I think I've interviewed him 3 times in my career. I've always enjoyed talking to him. I love it that he's so astute on the history of the game. I remember an interview I did with him years ago where we talked about Michigan State was going on the road. I'll say about 5 or 6 years ago, they were going on the road and they were going to play at the Palestra, which is this great venue for basketball, but it's this old venue for basketball outside of Philadelphia. And we just spent like 2 questions talking about the history of that building and the importance of buildings like that. It was so cool. It was so cool to talk to a guy that had been everywhere, taking his team. His team played on an aircraft carrier, for crying out loud, but he was excited to go to the Palestra, a place like that. I was glad he grabbed the moment that community really needed and knew what the significance was of it. He didn't just keep it about basketball. He knew it was a bigger thing. He didn't say win the game for everybody. Like he went play your best for everybody, play as hard as you can for everybody. And let's see what happens. And they went on and they upset the 18th ranked team in the country, Indiana. That's very, very well done. And Michigan State's had an up and down year this year, but that was a very, very solid win. But it was, again, mostly because it was an extremely emotional night. I've not been to very many games where that setting is. I, to be honest with you, I can't remember a game I've ever been to where at the beginning of it, you knew you were in for an emotional evening. I've been to games where they've honored a fallen player that passed away or whatever. I mean, I've been to those kind of settings, but I've never been to something, high school game, college game, where there's been something tragic and that game you knew was going to be something different. And you really could see it. I watched a little bit of the game last night and you could really feel it. It was really, really emotional. But again, outside of that was a very good win for Michigan State. About 3 or 4 games for high division one, 3 or 4 games are left in the regular season. Now, when I say high division one, you can be in division one, but if you're like a mid-major, your conference tournament is next week. You're kind of wrapping up your regular season this week. If you're in the Sun Belt, some of the Missouri Valley Conference, those kind of conferences, you're getting done this week. And everyone else is going to play an extra week, and then you'll have the conference tournaments coming up. So I'm as excited for that as ever. I think it's very wide open. I really enjoyed our conversation last week at Shelby Mast, bracketwag.com. Usually you get, maybe 4 teams, 5 teams that can win it. This could go 10-plus deep of teams that could actually win this whole thing, that have the tools that you need. Obviously, surprises can come from anywhere in a tournament like that. But if you're handicapping it at the beginning, you can usually find about 5 or 6 teams, that's about it, that have everything that you want. But this time, you could probably go 10-plus. It's that wide open for the NCAA tournament. All right, Hour 3 is coming up next. Ken Weinman's going to join us from Baltimore. We'll talk to him about the Ravens situation.